I'm Corey Grushka, the founder of Stories Bureau, a creative agency that specializes in storytelling and multimedia creative for all things insights.
And I'm Simrat Saran, a marketing expert with over 15 years experience in helping the biggest brands create true memories.
I want to inspire you to think bigger, broader, and more creatively.
And I want to push you to make you think and go beyond the job description.
Let's get started. Hey,
man, it is so good to see you.
It's great to see you too, man. How you doing?
Good. How you been?
I've been great.
It has been, what, 2 weeks since we last talked?
I think so, yeah. Although I feel like it's like 2 weeks, but that goes by very quickly with us.
And I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. I know it took a lot of convincing to get you in. thank you for returning emails so promptly. But man, am I excited to talk today with you. From just being fascinated with everything you guys do in the creative agency world to also having the conversation about why the hell don't insights people and creatives work well together in the sandbox. And then a little bit on the power of stories as you guys have sort of, you know, mastered the art of convincing people that even though it's not great, it will do.
Yeah, I'm excited as well. Listen, and I apologize to not responding to the first couple of emails that you sent. I was not ignoring you. But I appreciate the persistency. No, I'm super excited too. I love this idea of us having a chance to sit and talk. I know, you know, you said a few nice things. I feel the same way about you guys. And so I'm excited to sort of talk about you, talk about us, talk about, you know, how we've been working together and just in generally the industry and, you know, how we start to rethink some of the things that some of the bad behaviors and old habits that we've been having over the course of a couple of years.
Man, you've been all over the place, right? Wunderman, McCann, Gray, Fig, which you started on your own. And then FCB New York. What's that career been like? And what are some highlights that you're like, I remember these things very fondly about?
The way that I like to talk about my career is I do feel like it's been an interesting sort of linear path, but I have bounced around a little bit in a couple of different places. The where I started, I really appreciate sort of the origin story of my career because I think it gave me this foundation that I'm very appreciative of. I started at Wunderman when it was just Wunderman, mm-hmm. when like Lester was still riding the elevators, right? So like you'd like bump into
him.
Yeah, it was cool. And it was weird too, because that was kind of the only way you would see him was in the elevator. So it made you think maybe that was all he did anymore was ride the elevators. But I started out as a CRM strategist, like pure play CRM. So I would write telemarketing scripts. Inbound scripts, outbound scripts. I'd work with fulfillment houses and I learned about, you know, conversion rates and fulfillment rates. And if we send them a mail piece and then we call them after and then we, you know, follow it up with another mail piece, we get a 20% lift in conversion rate. And so I grew up like thinking that way and working with sort of that kind of data. I'd fly out to Nebraska to these call centers in the middle of nowhere and train the trainers and sit there for 3 days and talk to the people that were on the phone with the, you know, people calling in and really helping them train it and understand sort of how to make the sale. So I started at like the transaction data sort of point of interaction with consumers. I took that and then, I sort of evolved that into digital strategy. So like just as digital strategy was coming, I started to then get into, and I worked at MRM and started to understand, all right, how does that kind of idea of conversion and efficacy and impact relate now to a new medium? And we started to work very closely with Diageo and I started to work very closely with Intel. When Intel was just starting to figure it out.
This is like what, the early 2000s?
This was like, yeah, it was like 2005, 2006, 2007. Like I was there right when I was at a digital agency when the iPhone came out. Like it was like that kind of moment where it was like pre and post. And I remember having a conversation with this guy, Tom, who was the CMO at running Captain Morgan. And he was like, what is this mobile thing? Like, what's happening here? And him and I were like, all right, let's figure this thing out. And like, so I was there. I was at the beginning when like Facebook started to take off and working with Intel to be like, how do we make like a social platform for you guys and really think about it? And so there's these really interesting things happening at that time, which was there were a bunch of people that had that were working really hard to figure out new models and new frameworks. And how do we measure things in different ways? How do we understand consumer behavior in different ways? And no one had done any of it before. Like, we were these pioneers. So it's like every week someone else would come up with a new thing. We'd be like, oh, cool. All right, that guy at RGA cracked something. Let's start to like figure that out and how we can leverage it as well. So it was a really exciting time. I loved it. It was working with great clients, Intel, Diageo, that really sort of like were pushing us forward in a lot of different dimensions. I grew up there. So at that point, then I had like this weird one-on-one CRM kind of background. I had a digital background that was pretty strong. And then around like 2010-ish or something, 11, Gray called, and Gray in New York was blowing up, and Tor and all of those people were doing amazing stuff. And they're like, look, we have to, like, all the creative agencies at the time, we got to figure out our digital thing. You know, they were behind. And at that point in the world, there were digital agencies and there are creative agencies. And they were not talking to each other. Even within McCann, there was McCann and there was MRM, right? It was like this, these divides. And they were like, we got to get, you know, modern. And will you come over and be one of the one or two digital strategists, basically, at Gray? And so I came over and immediately started to say, you know, help out from a digital strategy standpoint. But by being in that world and by being with such like the brilliant planners that were there, and they really was, it was pound for pound one of the most impressive planning departments I think that has ever existed, to be completely honest. There's like 9 CSOs that came out of that group at that time. It's like really impressive. And I just got sucked into this thing, and all of a sudden, like, my head exploded.
What was so good about them?
I think what they had cracked was it was that perfect alchemy of amazing creative talent, a culture of creativity that Tor had established, and these like brilliant brand planners that knew not just like the basics and foundations of brand planning, but applied this element of creativity to brand planning. And they had this like slightly different ingredient when it came to that. And so at the time, it was like just this like weird magic that was happening within the halls, where it's like everything was always like the standard was so high in terms of not just the creative output, but the creative input. And I think that's what sort of I got incredibly excited about, is I had never seen that. But, and I know where you're kind of going, we'll get to it. It was still pretty like traditional in terms of what the fuel was for the strategy. It was, you know, it was qual, it was very basic kind of quant, it was, you know, classic just kind of desktop research and stuff. But the people were able to sort of take this and put it into and create these stories and create these alchemies. And I was just kind of blown away. And I was like, look, I went in as a digital strategist and I came out as a brand planner. And that's kind of what happened to me. And so that sort of was the third part of me that sort of locked in, was I was like, oh, I'm definitely this too. Like, and that sort of opened my eyes to, all right, I got this, I understand this one-to-one. I understand like deep sort of what drives business, what drives impact. I understand digital in a new world and a new medium and sort of consumer behaviors that are living in a different environment. And now I understand how a brand needs to behave and what a brand needs to be and what it can be and how that can be translated to, you know, top tier creative output. And so I took all that. And, of course, left it all. And by the way, I recognize that I'm probably over-explaining my background, so I'll move.
Greg. No, go for it.
I took all that and I moved to, I started a little side gig with a buddy of mine, this guy Ryan, who is really great. And we started like a little four-man little shop. And I've always had a little Kramer in me. So I have like a notebook full of 1,000 stupid ideas. And, you know, my dad was an electrical engineer that invented stuff. And, you know, and so I fell into this little group and we were like, look, let's make stuff. Let's be makers. And we had a creative technologists is one of our three. And we were like, let's start doing stuff. So we started making and inventing things and trying to, you know, like Kickstarter type stuff. And we made, you know, really fun stuff. I made a collar for pets that would not only track where a pet would go. And this was like very early days of connected devices, but you'd put in a little profile and you put sensors around your house. And if the pet was like, if your dog was like sleeping on the couch all day, it would like text you, you know, from your voice of your dog and be like, man, I just woke up from an epic nap. So you'd get this like feedback from your dog and it would answer this question of like, and everyone has in their head, like, what's my dog doing all day? You know, so it's like, we were just having fun making these things. But for me, it was like this entrepreneurial spirit that was kind of coming out in me and this maker kind of attitude. So I did that for a few years. I satisfied that. And then McCann came calling and McCann was like, look, same thing. We want some, like, we love your digital background. We love your gray background. We have this big Microsoft account. We need someone that can do both of these things. You fit the profile perfectly. I jumped in at McCann, worked on Microsoft for a couple of years, and it was amazing. Met incredible people, really sort of elevated my understanding of not just now brand and digital, but like integrated planning and how the things can work together.
Microsoft's a monster in terms of brand.
Right. Oh my God. And it was such an interesting point for Microsoft because it was like they're at this point that they're like, how do we transform the brand from the sort of the old Bill Gates, Steve Ballmer days to the new Sachin days and to the, you know, how do we make it sort of have more empathy and role and culture in the world and more approachable and consumer goods and all of that. And I just loved it. And McCann again, like Rob Riley was saying like what Tor had done at Gray. So the standard was so high that I loved it as well. I did that for a few years. And then to bring it all the way back, all of my friends that were at Gray had moved over to FCB and they're like, we're rebooting FCB. Yeah. Susan Cradle is there. And here's our moment. We're going to take everything we knew and we're going to reboot this thing. And I had been like, this is it. Like I can now take everything that I sort of built up with all of these different, you know, experiences. And I get to take this entrepreneurial spirit I have, which is to make something and not just drop into the next agency that's already hot, the Gray that's already hot or the McCann that's already hot. I can actually help build something and bring it to that standard that I had seen in those two places and jumped in. And it honestly couldn't have been a better decision in my life. I'm so fortunate of the choice that I made to do it and the people around me that I sort of dropped in and then surrounded me after that. And it kind of changed my life. And I really feel incredibly fortunate and lucky that I joined FCB and the community and the group of people that I'm with now.
I was working on Michelob Ultra Insight. So I was leading that as part of the portfolio. And FCB was working on the creative aspects of it. And so we sort of touched each other's work. And I mean, look, I think in the end we did good work, but it wasn't a fun experience, right? Which is classic for almost all creative and insights agents, organizations. I feel like there's this, and I actually remember being at Pepsi and there was this 200 marketer workshop where the CMO came in and said how to give a creative feedback. Like that was an actual 3-hour workshop. You don't tell an agency things are good, things are bad. This is how you have to position it.
Oh, interesting.
All of that stuff. Yeah, and I was sitting there and I was like, wow, nobody does that for us. but yeah, creatives are feelings.
Yeah.
I thought it was fascinating. And then the more I worked with you and the team, realizing how much goes into making what you guys make, from the nebulousness of what the brief is to trying to figure out what the direction should be. Like, I always thought it was, hey, here's the brief, you know, and you guys go up and you're like, oh, this is the cool new trend. Let's just put this on paper. Let's get our editors to make something cool. And then we'll convince them otherwise that this is what they need to do. But just working with you over the last, you know, few weeks, we started in December.
Yeah.
So the last 7 months has been like, you guys have a machinery behind you. that I was surprised by. And it got me thinking that you probably bathe in more data than the average insights organization. Yet you are able to tell better stories. Yet you are able to come to better conclusions. And talk me through that. Like, how do you guys do it?
I think it's a bunch of things. I mean, for one, I'm very fortunate in that, you know, IPG and Axiom and all of the audience data, like it kind of starts there in many respects. I think you saw when we started to cook on some of the work we were working on a couple of months ago. We always start there and we have this massive wealth of audience data that we can play in.
But it must confuse the crap out of you, right? Like
everyone's got data somewhere, right? It's like you got to learn how to find the data that's going to help you tell the story. And you have to also learn to let some data go. Like there's, if you don't let some go, you're going to get overwhelmed and you're not going to have a story. But often what I try to do a lot is we say, all right, we know what we're kind of looking for, right? We're looking for, from an audience standpoint, we're often looking for what makes not the audience an average, like we don't want the averages. We want the outliers. We want the interesting sort of tensions. That's the first thing we're looking for. So, all right, the data says they aspire to do this, but they actually do that. Cool. That's a great tension. Great. Now we have like some real humanity in this data versus, 82% of them like to have fun. You're like, great. They enjoy their friends. You know, like you're going to find the same shit. But if you find the tensions and you find the narrative sort of in the data, then you start to immediately sort of hone yourself a little bit. And then you get creative. And this is what I was saying before, like, you know, you can put a whole bunch of data in front of, you know, the same data in front of five different people. And you might get five different stories that come out of the data. And I think what we do is we apply creativity to literally everything we do, from not just creativity to us isn't just the output, isn't the final edit, but it's the curiosity we put into looking at data and trying to find something. And I think often what I've seen is, and I don't want to disparage anyone, but what I've seen is the difference between a creative agency looking at data and a client and a research and an insights department looking at data is the insights department's looking at the data that they know the like upper management wants to see or expects, or they looked at last year and the year before and the year before, and they create a data playbook that they're like, these are the 20 things we kind of need to understand to satisfy the internal muscle of what everyone expects the data to be able to do, I assume. What we do is we're like, we're just looking for the story. Like, what's the interesting thing that's going to unlock the opportunities or unlock the insights? And it might be data we haven't ever looked at before. Hopefully it is, right? Or it might be data that, you know, is hard to understand and therefore we had to twist and understand and unlock it in a slightly different way.
Whenever you think about segmentations, right? Like, I'm sure like when you get briefs, like they give you, here's a consumer segments, here's consumer muses. This is the consumer profile. Hand on heart, how many times do you actually look at that stuff and being like, oh my God,
look, like,
this is the biggest garbage I've ever seen in my life.
I think there's a lot of work that goes into those. And I also respect how difficult it is for any of us. I respect how difficult it is for any of us in any part of this industry to do something and successfully and get it through, you know, the system. I think all of our jobs are very hard. But I think the audience data that that agencies typically get, I look at it as the start of where we need to go. I think if you look at it as the final product of here's the audience, then you're screwed because it just isn't. There's more to know and there's more to understand. I think the clients are very good at identifying audiences, but it's from a lens of, it's typically, not always, there's some that are way better, but often it's from through a lens of the product or the category or the business, which is helpful, right? We need that. But it's not the actual true sort of reflection of an actual human. It's not really a person, yeah. Right? Like the joke I always made is like, it's like we often will get an audience, you know, segmentation or data or profile back from a client. It's like, you know, meet Sally. Like, her life is perfect. She's a busy yep. mom and doing all these things, but like, oh man, she's got one problem. If only she had a cooking oil that she could trust, you know? And you're like, that's not a real person, you know? And like, so we have to be like, wait a minute. Like, let's, yes, cool. So she needs a cooking oil that she trusts and she's busy, got it. But like, let's pause for enough time that we can really unlock it. And that's when we do a couple of different things that I do think are very unique, which is we work with a partner, and they do, you've seen the output, they do the implicit association sort of test and the need states. And so what we do is we apply what is the goals and the motivations from a data-driven standpoint that this audience is looking for in the brand and the category. Then we apply a lot of what the clients give us, which is like, okay, yeah, who is the category buyer? Like, you guys know that better than us. Like, what is the category buyer and what do they need and all that? And then we apply a third piece, which is what is underneath this brand? And that's usually very collaborative with the clients, but it's like, what's that brand behavior, that DNA? You know, if it's Budweiser, it's like an Americana spirit. Cool. Like, what is the thing that we want to sort of like believe in that we want people to connect with? And if we can kind of triangulate those three things, all right, they're in the category, they're light users or heavy or whatever. They have this implicit goal that they're trying to, you know, either achieve or need or be. And we as a brand are standing for these things that we want them to connect with. If we find that sweet spot, now we found an audience that's addressable because it's Axiom that actually, if you shake the tree, they should fall off the bone. You know, I just sort of mixed two metaphors,
yeah, but you get the idea. Quite a few things. Like, the tree ain't vegetarian.
Yeah, but you get the point. But that's sort of like, so for us, it's about combining and taking different data sources and putting it all into one thing and sort of trying to tell a narrative about it. That's just from an audience standpoint.
This is where I feel like what you just said, which is the data that most insights organizations produce is usually the starting point for any sort of solution development. And people stop at the first step.
Yeah.
And then they'll come back at the end to critique the final step, right?
The insights group? Yeah, like a research group or something, yeah.
Yeah, whereas, you know, I always have felt that insights should be not focused on creating data, but creating solutions. And the goal of any good insights organization is to work with the creative agency partners and say, hey, we're both in this to help marketing build the best brand ever, mm-hmm. or the company build the best brand ever. But I don't see the collaboration happening between the agency and the insights organizations. In some cases, like, it is the insights organizations auditing the creative agency's work.
Every time I've been with connected closely, and I've worked with a ton of insight agencies or insight departments, they want to do all of that. Like, to be honest, like, I think I've seen good intent across the board. I think part of it is process, and part of it is they get caught up. They don't get involved when they should, and they're involved when they shouldn't. And so there's a bit of that. But as people, they're like, yeah, we're here. Like, we have all this data and this richness. I think I agree with you on the scorecard part. I think that goes in two directions. I think sometimes at the back end, they're there for the validation of something. And that's like, that gets messy because they're validating off of sometimes new metrics that you're like, this wasn't part of the upfront, and like, now we're holding ourselves to it, and that's a shame. Or we're just being too rigid to things in the back end. It's like, well, it didn't click this one thing's orange, and because it's orange, it's like, you know, go back to the start. It's like, oh shit. But the other problem is, I think sometimes early, I think sometimes there's a bit of a rigid playbook that has been, you know, codified in people's minds within an institution. It's like, look, the only way we're going to grow is if we drive this one category driver. And I think very often it becomes very much a conversation early on, too early, around almost like persuasion marketing, like old school kind of like, we have to persuade them with these rational arguments to move the metrics. And I don't think that's how advertising works. And so there's a big disconnect between the data they're collecting, which says persuasion marketing is the way to do it, and the truth that drives behavior, which is emotion, entertainment, sort of
memories. You know,
memories, exactly. It's like it's a whole different data set that there's a massive disconnect, and that forces us, I think, into these sort of difficult conversations.
Growing up in the world of insights, like the scorecard was the first thing they taught you. It's like, these are the 9 boxes. If these boxes are green and this is yellow, it's fine. But otherwise, you cancel the ad, literally. But when you get the box and you'd ask the agency, why is this, not the creative agency, but you know whoever you used as your research partner, why is it that this is there? They will explain the number behind the number. Like they will explain, because this particular metric scored low. Why did this metric score low? There's no answer to that. And that to me was also fascinating, that the people that are judging creativity are not people who are qualified to judge creativity. They are statisticians who are qualified to conduct research in a very particular way. For most of them, they don't care whether it was an ad, a product, or whether it was the statistics that we apply, and we apply statistics. But it's not, how do you make a story more impactful? Like, that is a very different art. And how do you help somebody achieve their vision of a story? That seems to be a skill completely lacking in a lot of places.
I think it is a bit of the scorecard problem. I think, you know, I was just talking about this to the agency yesterday. There's a thing called the McNamara fallacy. And the McNamara fallacy is you measure what you can, not what you should.
Exactly.
And I think we fall into those types of bad behaviors. And I think those bad behaviors were built over a long period of time that, you know, these departments and these groups and all of us, the industry, had started to measure things that they could measure. And therefore, we put a lot of sort of stock in them. But it's not actually necessarily all the things we should. And it's not necessarily always incredibly helpful. Like, if you think about how this all works, how this advertising works, yes, there's a time and place for these very rational, persuasive kind of things. But some of the greatest things that have happened in this industry, a piece of, you know, data could never have told you to do it. And like an insight from a research thing could never have told you, you know, I think, you know, for somebody that just popped in my head, but the Hathaway eye patch, you know, like that thing of like in the 1950s, right? It was like this made this brand incredibly famous. Like, how did it happen? Because David Ogilvy was walking to the, you know, to the shoe and walked past a eye patch in the on the street and was like, that's cool. And put it on the guy, and like that became this amazingly distinct thing, right? The what is it? The Duluth dog, right? The paint dog. Like, there's some famous thing. The gorilla in Cadbury. Like, these are things that like very difficult to imagine would have come out of a spreadsheet, but they changed brands, they changed businesses. So I think it's a balance, you know, because I've also at the same respect, again, I want to be really careful. Like I have had incredible great relationships with a lot of the insights departments, and I always value like what they bring to the table and the data. I just see it as they're kernels, they're nuggets, they're foundational things. It can't stop there. Like I remember, you know, we work with Haleon a lot, and they had done first started working with them. They had done some amazing, massive analysis in the vitamin industry, huge like data set, global, all this stuff. And they had found this really interesting sort of insight about sort of like what was the main universal thing that we needed to talk about. And I'll be completely honest, we didn't pay it enough attention for like months. And we kept running at the problem and coming up with different things and circling it and going all around it. And it wasn't working. And then we, you know, at one point we went back to this data set that they had that was like, hey, here was this one core kernel of a sort of driver that, if you will, that you need to make sure you satisfy. And once we looked at that and we were like, oh, all right, what if we built on top of that and around it and, you know, like stretched it and really understood it, kept it at the core, but really dimensionalized it in interesting ways, but made sure that was always at the center. Everything unlocked and then, you know, growth came and ideas started to flow and it started to work. And so it's just a good reminder that like, you got to look at it, but look at it the right way. And then there's value in all of it, I think.
So here's a curveball for you, because I had a few friends of mine within the insight space. And I was like, hey, I'm going to be talking to, you know, the CSO of FCB New York. Is there anything you would like to ask that I can? And I didn't give you the heads up on this because I wanted to get your natural reaction. And they basically said, why is it that creative agencies hold their work so close to their chest and do not cooperate with insights organizations as much as they do with brand? They're almost like, they feel like pariahs. So I don't want to make this a one-sided conversation, but they do feel like pariahs in the room because they're like, it feels like we're not important.
Right. A, I think different agencies are different when it comes to that. I do think actually FCB is different. I've seen that in other places. And I think, I'll speak for the other agency, I think we're better. I think we're better at it. I think the reason why is there is probably a fear, if it happens, that a researcher and insights department is going to come in too early and judge things too harshly, too quickly. And not let something breathe and grow and be messy. And I think they have a tendency probably to make sure everything's orderly and organized and structured and right.
And final.
An advertising agency, a creative agency's process is it's messy until it's right. And we are comfortable with messy. Our clients typically that we deal with on a day-to-day basis are, you know, 80% comfortable with messy. So we have a shared, but they keep us honest. I think the research and insights are very well less comfortable with messy and dirty and not perfectly right. And so like for us, it's like, all right, yes, we know that. We're not ready for that kind of input yet because we're still trying to figure out maybe the, what, you know, what are the broader strokes here? Yeah.
Yeah, the core stuff that's going to form it.
Yeah, and then we'll get to that. And so sometimes there might be friction there, I think. But I also think, to be honest and to be fair, I don't know if it's always us. Like I do think creative agencies are hungry for like, give me the structure that I need to make sure that we're as efficient as possible through the system. And so I do think also sometimes it's an internal thing as well. I've seen large clients, our day-to-day clients be like, we're not ready yet for our internal teams to be looking for it because we haven't yet felt comfortable yet. And so there's something that happens, I think, internally too, that we often don't see, that they may be thinking it's on us, but it's actually an internal self-inflicted wound.
Because there were a lot of times when I was like, I have spent so many hours with the consumers, like on a day-to-day basis. Where I can feel what they will feel.
Yes.
Even now with like, all the work that we've been doing at Neuro Insight and studying advertising and studying how people react to it, you can start to get an intuition about how things will work. But when we were working on the past project together, and it was all rough ideas, what the creative team had been given, 4 days to come up with like 6 ideas.
Yeah. Right? Maybe that. I don't know.
That would work across like 14 different markets.
Yeah.
What I found fascinating was how you, like the strategy team and the new business development team, was working with the creatives. It was like you weren't critical, but you were giving direction, which was well received, which I found was, man, that's an art that I wish was taught outside the advertising agency to other people.
It's two things. It's definitely a learned sort of art that I think good strategists and good and business leads and good partners just in general. And I do agree. You know, even good clients have it too, because I think it's a respect for the fact that there's a process, there's a creative process, and you have to sort of nurture the creative process, and that everyone brings a slightly different additive perspective to it. Like, I have something that maybe the creative team hadn't thought about. I'm not poking holes. I'm just trying to lift it up or move it or make sure it's pointed in the right direction. Now, there might be times when you're like, you got to kill that thing because it's not going to work. But because I have intel or information or an instinct that you don't have, so there's a respect there. But the truth of the matter is, I think we always look at work and what the creative department is coming up with as sort of a collaborative effort. And I think what makes us very different is, yes, it's an art in how to have those conversations. But the bigger thing is we have a culture that allows for those conversations to happen in a unique way. And I think, you know, we often talk with Michael Ahmed, who's the chief creative officer, Emma as well. Like, we just look at things slightly different than other agencies. And what I sort of recognized early on, when I go back to my story of like when I was at McCann and when I was at Gray, is I think the best creatives in the field, hands down, are the ones that are the most open to that kind of collaboration. And so what we've done is we've created a world where at least strategy and creative, it's very feathered. It's very overlappy. You know, they feed into strategy. We feed into the creative process. And so it's not like two departments working, you know, against each other or handing things off. It's really like all of us are in the same boat paddling in the same direction. And so, of course, I'm going to listen to you or give your, you know, thoughts and sort of direction, because you have the same intent that I have, or it's like you have the same goal that I have. And I respect that you have a high bar for creativity and that you're doing it with the intent to make everything better. And so if we have that shared sort of sentiment, the shared sort of value, then it's received. If you don't, and you're like, you're those people and we're these people, and together, you know, I'm responsible, I'm the creative people and you're the strategy person, then it's adversarial, and it's never, never, you know, going to work that way. And so I think it's a combination of culture, and it's a combination of people. It's a combination of like the art of sort of giving feedback and collaborating, and just generally just how an agency, you know, sort of the expectations of an agency. I just want to say, for you though, I think you are like a weird creature, because you and I did pop into that situation, and you were able to, like, just as much as I was and the rest of the team, able to sort of build. You have like the ability that I think is very rare as well, is you have that.
Is that a job offer?
You have that very deep analytical mind. Yeah. Like, we'll just, you know, look, there's, you know, we'll start talking, but the some of the thoughts that you were able to do on the fly actually really did contribute and help so much to the strategic and creative process, that I went back, I told everyone, like, this came out of the conversation that you and I had, and it was incredibly valuable. So, you know, I think are sort of a weird unicorn when it comes to that.
I feel like I will be remiss if I did not at least touch on this topic. You know, I think one thing that you guys do better than insights organizations around the world is how you're able to move an organization with a story. So tell me about that.
Nothing is more powerful than a story in the world, right? I mean, there's a reason why we binge watch Netflix, because like that's that at the end of a hard day, and we put, you know, 8 more hours in.
Don't you have kids?
Well, but I should say that Netflix is on for 8 hours, but I'm sleeping by like 7 minutes into the show. But technically, no, it's so true. And you know, it comes in a couple of different ways. You know, I think you probably saw some of the things we did. Like, I put a huge amount of emphasis with me and my team on, look, if you've got a strategy, you're not going to want to just, you know, put the facts in order and try to move the room. Like, it's not going to work. You have to tell a narrative. You have to pull people in. And I think that storytelling is both sort of what I was saying earlier. It's like, find tensions, find curiosities, find oddities, find things that are outliers that you can make sense of. Like, how do you pull things into different places and really pull people into the narrative that ultimately makes logical sense, but is appealing on an emotional level? Like, how do you do that in sort of an interesting way? And one of the ways to do it, or probably the way to do it, is to really, really believe that creativity is not an output. You know, it's an input. It's like our part of everything that we do. And when I look at, you know, writing a deck, and when my team looks at writing a narrative or writing a presentation, it's like you have to apply creativity to that presentation. Like that strategy is a creative output. You know, that is a creative artifact. And your presentation in the room is a creative act. You know, how you present to it, how do you stand up, look people in the eye and be like, here we go. Like, I'm going to tell you a story. And that story starts with a business problem, you know, like get them in, you know, like have them have fun. And so, I mean, I think it's all part of that. And so, I don't know, I always think about one quote, if I can leave you with, that always sort of drives me a little bit, which is, it was Maya Angelou, which said, you can't use up creativity. The more you use, the more you have. And I think that's sort of like the way I always think about it. It's just like, put it all in, you know, find all the inspiration you can, and then output it out as some form of creative act, and good things will follow.
Inspiring Insights is powered by Stories Bureau. This episode was produced by Alexandra Uresta with help from Mather De Leon. It was engineered and mixed by Tim Ballant and was edited by Joshua Ramsey. If you're into the show, why not follow Stories Bureau on LinkedIn, where you'll also find Corey and Samrat. And visit storiesbureau.com to learn more about how we tell stories that empower insights for companies all over the world. We'll be back in a month with another insightful conversation that'll inspire you to go beyond the job description. Until then, thanks for listening.